This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. And thank you so much to G. Trulia. We're honored to be here. I think this is maybe our fifth year, and it's the 21st annual TST big event. Hell of a turnout here, Tom.
Yes, very much so.
I just heard Bernie Thompson up on the stage. Man, what a...
What a character.
What a character. And somebody came in and said, Bernie tells you how molecules work. Well, I guess as a technician, you need to know that.
When, you know, I just talking to him about that, and whenever I taught five gas exhaust emissions analysis, I did the same thing.
Yeah.
It was always started on a molecular level.
Yeah.
Because if you don't understand that, you can't understand the end result.
Right. You're hearing the voice of Tom Petty from Petty Motor Works in Waretown, New Jersey.
That's correct.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on, Carm. I really appreciate it.
Glad to have you. It always happens. We go to events, we bring in our guest or our panel to the studio, and we start talking, and we've already done the episode. And I had to say, Tom, time out. This is all too good. We got to capture this stuff on tape. He's a Napa Gold, and I don't know if anyone is aware of that, but Napa's got this really high-level status of being a Napa Auto Care Gold, and you got to go through an awful lot. So congrats to earning gold.
We were the first one in New Jersey, and I still think we're only one of a few. I think there's only two or three.
Napa Auto Care Centers are recognized as an integral piece to what sets Napa apart from the competition. And the Napa Auto Care brand? Well, it continues to be fully integrated into the national marketing strategy by optimizing targeted media in local markets and in proven channels. Don't forget, Napa Auto Care Centers have an online presence on Napa Online with the Auto Care Locator tool, generating millions of views per month. If you're interested in partnering with Napa Auto Care and capitalizing on America's largest network of parts and care, talk to your Napa Auto Parts sales rep today.
You worked as a technician in a Napa Auto Care. So take us back a few years, and because your progression is so neat, because wait till everyone hears that he left the Napa Auto Care independent to go to work for a dealership. Yeah. I got to hear, understand
full
that.
Circle.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, paying for my way to go through college. I was in an engineering technology program at a local community college, which is studying electrical engineering. And that was my passion at the time. And I was pumping gas and, you know, paying for my college in 1982. My boss says to me, "Well, you're the electronics guy. Here, figure this out," in 1983 or so. And I did. I understood there was a level of, hey, I know electrical really well. It's been a hobby of mine forever. You know, I was the kid that had that Radio Shack project kit box and Heath kit stuff, you
yes,
know?
Heath yeah. kits.
Yes.
Look that up on Google.
Right. So I worked for that shop in Spring Lake, New Jersey for 7 or 8 years. And I started technical training in the process. I was in my mid-20s. And I got a proposition from a local Ford dealership because they actually came to one of my classes. And they made me an offer that I couldn't refuse. And I worked at a Ford dealership in Southern Ocean County for 26 years.
What were you teaching?
I was teaching at a local vocational level.
What was the course that they watched you and said, we need you?
So it was a class titled Domestic Fuel Injection.
Okay.
Right? And I titled it myself. And I had very little support from Ocean County Vocational at the time because evening school training was, here's a clipboard, here's your roster, give me a name for the class. And I built a 40-hour class, the first class they ever did.
Wow.
You know, using actual cut and paste technique, you know, where you actually use the glue pen, you know, to cut something
Stop
out, stick it.
It,
and photocopy it in.
You
Come on. Really, yeah. And one of their service advisors and technicians came to that 40-hour class. And they made me an offer like 2 years later, hounded me. And I didn't want to go work for a dealership. And I did. And it was really a good place to work. You know, I worked there for a very long time.
A long time.
Yeah. When I was 52 years old, my son came to me and said, I would like to do this, Dad.
And how old was he at the time?
He was like 14. I guess it was a little bit earlier than that.
He was a very young man.
Yes.
You still were at 52. According to today's records, 52 is the new 40, right?
Yeah.
Okay. He came to you as a very young man and said, I'd love to do this. But what was this? What did he mean by this?
He wanted to be a mechanic, right?
Okay.
And I said, okay, well, listen, I've been around the block at this point. I said, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. We're going to have a family business. All right. So we started working out of our house, you know, until we built enough customers with neighbors and friends and family to eventually get strong enough to where we could find a shop to move into. And that's exactly what we did. And 8 years ago this May, all right, we moved into that shop. And he's now 27. So I guess we started probably a little bit before then out of our house. And being a technical trainer, I had my own training business as well. I did a lot of sublet work, you know, for shops that, you know, struggled with some of the more advanced diagnostic stuff. You know, I did that through my entire time, you know.
You were a mobile diag and didn't know it.
Yes, I was, right.
I know.
So I did technical training at night. I worked at the dealership all day, and I helped the shops that would come to my technical training with difficult-to-fix problems.
Wow.
So.
You had zero work-life balance.
I didn't. I have five kids. I have three boys and two girls.
God bless you.
And my sons got into scouting, Boy Scouts.
All right. Right.
And I stepped back from my technical training because I didn't want to miss my kids growing up. And I became a Boy Scout leader. I've been a Boy Scout leader for 25 years.
Oh, man.
And, you know, one of my kids make it Eagle Scout. So, and that I stepped away from technical training to be more family oriented because it was just, I was gone nonstop.
Okay. How do we keep our technicians engaged?
When you approached me to talk about this, you talked about how do you set the culture for a shop?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me back up a little bit. When I was at the dealership, I identified that I was somebody who was passionate about training to begin with because I always had a thirst for knowledge. But I was frustrated because my dealership, they had close to 30 technicians at one time. And most of those people didn't want to learn, only a handful.
I keep hearing that.
I know. It was very frustrating.
Is it still common today?
Yes.
Because they say, oh, the dealer trained technician. And someone was telling me the other day, last week, they don't want to go to training.
They don't want to go to training. They're forced to go to training to meet warranty standards for the dealerships. Right. In other words, they have to meet minimal warranties checklists, you know, so to speak. So I was very frustrated. There was only, we were a very, skilled dealership. You know, don't get me wrong. Most dealerships have one or two guys that are their go-to guys. You know, we probably had five or six guys that were highly skilled and engaged in training and wanted to learn stuff. But the balance, they just kind of like wanted to, replace parts and do things like that. And I think that, ratio is still consistent today because I only left the dealership about 10 years ago. Most of the dealership guys, they go to training when they're forced to, all right, which just baffles me. It baffles me. So when I opened my own shop, whenever I hired someone, I would say, listen, my wife's a social worker. She has to have so many continuing education credits a year, and I expect the same thing from you. Our job is a hell of a lot more difficult.
Well, I love that. I love that analogy.
Right.
Oh, so, that's perfect.
I said, so if you're going to come work for me, don't tell me you don't want to go to training because I won't hire you.
And that's what's missing today, isn't it? It's what's missing. I kind of blame it on both the technician and the shop owner. And here's what I mean. If I was a technician looking for a new job and I didn't ask the question, tell me about your training culture. Tell me how many hours you expect me to get. Who pays for it? And when can I go to my first class?
Came to me and said that, yeah. I'd probably hire in a spot.
That's my point. Right. That's my point. But if an owner can't even talk because they're talking too much and not listening enough, if they can't even talk about their commitment to career and training,
that's right.
Then they're hiring an individual who just doesn't want to get anywhere in life.
That's right.
And maybe possibly show up and call that a good day.
That's probably most of them. And it's very, very sad.
It's sad.
Yes. Today I have my son with me, has been working with me since he's tiny, because he's passionate about it even when he was young. I have my lead technician, who is a dealership technician I hired from a dealership. I have what was an apprentice, but he's no longer an apprentice because he's been with me for 4 years. And he is now a C-plus to B technician. So okay. I've developed him over the time. And I have two apprentice technicians, and they're both still in high school. They graduate just this June.
God bless you for bringing up our youth. We're not doing enough of this, even if you want to call a high school person an intern.
Right.
Oh, by the way, I got this wild thought. Someone picked up the phone the other day. It happens all the time, Tom. I got an idea for an episode, Carm. Right. Got an idea. And this person said, Carm, why don't we have interns do DVIs for us?
Every one of my apprentices learned. That's the first thing they learned.
And I said, that's really brilliant, but do they really know what they're looking for, was my question.
So the way I handle that is we have, obviously, DVIs are the best way because it's prompting you to look for certain things. But obviously, a skilled eye is more valuable to see things, right? Every courtesy inspection, that's what we call our DVI, has one of us more senior technicians review it with that apprentice.
All right.
And we point out the things that maybe they missed.
And or see, oh, you made this yellow. I don't know if it's red, green, or yellow. So maybe you spend 8 minutes with the intern as you groom and grow them,
yes,
mentoring them, apprenticing them.
Learn priority of repair.
Yeah, exactly right. So you're kind of convincing me that maybe that would be a great episode. Maybe what we need to do is to interview your guys and say, what did you learn? Why did you start? Do you think this is cool?
You know, one of the great stories I have is I have a young lady working for me. Her name's Raina. And she came to me when she was 16 with her dad, wanting to know if she wanted to be a welder or a mechanic. I said, they're both very good careers. You can make a lot of money. And I told her that, you know, if you're a fabricator and a welder, you can have a very engaging career. But if you're just a welder, it's a lot of looking through a little glass, right? And it can be extremely boring. So I said to you, but if you're going to be a mechanic or a technician, as I prefer to say, you have to get your hands dirty. Come in and find out if you want to learn it before you spend any money on technical training or anything like that. Because you need to know if you have that basic aptitude and want to continue with it.
Yeah. I believe I've said that being an automotive mechanical specialist or technology specialist is one of the most important skilled trades we have in our entire world.
You think about all the skilled trades. None of them evolve at a faster rate than automotive.
Right.
And none of them are as highly skilled or technical as the automotive field. I'm on the advisory board for Ocean County Vocational.
Okay. Right? Good for you. I'm on one too.
Yeah. And I'm trying to convince them that the general student that they're sending to vocational is not the student that should be in that program.
Our chairman said to us at our last meeting, last week, our advisory committee says, so everyone, I'm thinking of getting a driver training because I want my people to get licenses so that when they graduate here, they could actually get a job and drive there and not try to figure out how the bus route works. So I want you to take that back to your college and find out how many of these young people that are coming in, qualified or not, can actually drive to a job or to an internship.
One of the things that our county has, we have several charter schools in our county.
Okay.
Right. One of which is called MATES, and I believe that's the Marine Academic, you know, something program. Right. And you have to qualify to go in it. It's a high school level program. Mm-hmm. It's a 4-year program. And you have to qualify to get in it. And they have their phys ed program, they have all their academics, and it specializes around the STEM, mm-hmm. you know, science and technology. And they also have a law enforcement program, which is also a charter program. And the funny thing is that law enforcement program is actually in the same building as one of the automotive programs. I'm trying to see if I can convince our local freeholders to, hey, why don't you create an automotive charter program? You already have the infrastructure in place. And that way you can pre-qualify someone to go into the automotive program. Because unfortunately, most, I'm sure it's not just our vocational program, but most of the kids that go through automotive vocational do not continue. It's probably less than 10%, if less than that.
We're hearing some bad stats coming out of our grads.
Yes.
Bad stats. In fact, some of the stats, you probably know this, confirm or deny, that when they ultimately leave a dealership or leave even an independent, they don't stay in the industry.
That's correct.
Because we have disenchanted them.
Yes. Yes, exactly right. But, you know, the educational program is not fully to blame for that.
So. Oh, no. 100% agree. Where they go next should shape the rest of their career.
Correct. Because, you know, like my shop, you know, we focus on training and we focus on development. Even if it means that apprentice moves on, let's say he needs to move up to a different pay scale because he deserves it. I'm going to take the position of, let me see if I can find you a position. I know a lot of people. And then I'll bring in the next apprentice.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to pick on dealerships because they're not all this way. I don't want to create a stereotype. But unfortunately, kids come out of technical programs like UTI or Penco Tech or whatever it happens to be, or local vocational levels. They go into a dealership and what happens? The dealership just sees that as cheap labor.
Yes. Thank you for saying that, because the question that has been cycling in our industry is, what is a starting pay for an individual? Forget about college and debt and all that stuff, but what's the starting pay for a mechanical?
It's like minimum wage.
Yeah. What is minimum today? California now says it's what? Crazy money.
Now, I start my apprentices at minimum wage.
Okay.
Right. But it's a regularly structured pay increase from there.
Exactly.
And they're required to learn.
Yeah.
So looking at it from a business owner standpoint, and, you know, I have a coaching service, ATI, I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah, sure. Right.
And we look for a 60% labor margin. So yeah. For any listeners that's not familiar with that, that is, you take your technical staff's wage, add any loaded benefit package and taxes and all the stuff to it. And you need, let's say it's $10,000 a week. You need to bill out $25,000 a week in labor to cover that $10,000 a
week. Exactly.
2.5 times. That's a 60% margin.
Yeah.
But dealers want a 70% or more. So what that means is, how do you get a higher labor margin? Pay less.
Right.
charge more. So they're not allowing an opportunity for advancement. In a dealership environment, you should be taking that apprentice and marrying him to one of your high-skilled guys.
Yeah.
All right. And investing in that person's development.
It's too competitive.
Right. They're focused on the labor margin as opposed to the development of the staff that they're going to need to perpetuate their business.
Yeah. If you had a chance to speak at your career fair, which you recently had, and ours at our college is next week, in fact, what would you tell them that you should think about for a starting wage? Forget minimum wage, forget apprentices, forget internships. You're out of a two-year school. Here's what you should look for.
So coming out of a two-year school?
Yeah.
In our area, I would say it'd at least be the high teens.
Okay, the high teens.
Yes.
Right.
And depending on the structure. And one of the things I did at the dealership, I was a shop steward as well because we were a union shop. And I was very frustrated as how they would get young technicians and hold them in a pay rate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So in other words, yes, they're going to label an apprentice. Right. And at the time when I left the dealership, it was $11 an hour. Can you imagine? So that's about 10 years ago. And they would hold him at that rate until the kid either complained to the point to where he got some raise or he quit or moved on. And like you said, many times they would leave the field altogether, right? And that's what's killing us. So, you know, I put into the last contract that I did, I guess that was around 2016, an appendix about structured raises. Every 6 months, 50 cents. And I wrote this appendix and it cleared my union representative. And I said, I put in there, and if the person doesn't deserve that raise, there needs to be a reason why he doesn't deserve it. And if it means he's not right for the position, you got to tell him maybe it's time to move on to, you know, pick a different vocation. But to suppress his wage growth, is it wrong? And you do that progression until he reaches, you know, your agreed upon structural, you know, wage, you know, ABC stuff.
NAPA is proud to have America's largest network of parts and care with nearly 6,000 auto parts stores and over 18,000 auto care centers. In that spirit, the NAPA Auto Parts and Auto Care logos have a new look, carefully designed to be visually alike. This will further cement NAPA as the place to go for consumers when in need of vehicle maintenance. Now, did you know NAPA Auto Care was top-rated in a national survey by consumers of car repair in the chains and independent repair shops category? These ratings were based on courtesy, timeliness, quality, price of repair, and percent of times the problem was fixed on the first visit to the repair facility. NAPA Auto Care is the only banner program to make these ratings. Consumers are familiar with the NAPA Auto Care brand, and you can benefit from their continued success. Your independent repair facility can join this network and be supported through NAPA's national marketing by promoting your local repair facility with targeted media in local markets and in proven channels, allowing you to compete with a national presence by co-branding your locally known brand with the nationally recognized NAPA brand using the Pro Image Auto Care Program. Also, partnering with NAPA Smart Sign. Now, it educates your clients with engaging videos that tell the why behind a needed repair or service. You also get access to editable digital menu boards, template builder tools, social media feeds, and integrations with other auto care program elements. NAPA also offers a credit solution to customers with NAPA Easy Pay consumer financing with your business name embossed on the credit card. NAPA also gives you an online presence when the consumers search for a local repair facility on NAPA Online using the Auto Care Locator tool, which generates millions of views per month at no additional cost. From parts to care, from coast to coast, we are one NAPA. Now, if you're interested in partnering with NAPA Auto Care and capitalizing on the latest national marketing campaign, contact your servicing NAPA Auto Parts store sales rep.
Are we hurting our future technology specialists, mechanical specialists to hire when we go out as an industry and say, oh, you can earn $100,000? We're saying that loosely, it seems to me, without qualification.
That's correct. It takes time to get to a wage like that. And yes, you can earn $100,000. My elite technician's close to that point at this point. Yes, you can. But it takes time and experience.
Right.
Right. And, you know, what someone's worth is based on what they can produce for a company, obviously. But you have to have your company built right to be able to support
it. No kidding. I'm an owner and says, I don't make that money. Why would I want to even think of paying some? Wait a minute. I'm taking home 80. In order to set my ego up and my life, and so that I can put my head on the pillow every night, I will never pay anybody more than 60,000 because I'm taking home 80. And I would love to sit down with that individual and say, let me show you on a piece of paper how wrong that is.
That means you're not running your business right.
Yeah, I know. And it's an attitude that no one has been able to overcome because they haven't joined a coaching group or a mentoring group or a 20 group because they are unwilling to share their secret sauce because their secret sauce is just failure.
So even before I had a business and I was part of ATI, or I was at a technical training business. So I trained for Napa. I trained for parts stores, you know, tool companies. I trained for Snap-on for a while. You know, shop owners come up to me. I can't find anyone. I can't tell you how many times I heard that. I said, that means you're not buying the talent you need. Well, I can't afford to pay them. Well, then you're not running your business right. If you can't afford to buy the talent you need to be in business, then your business model's flawed.
I have to tell you, that's the big takeaway right now from this episode. If you're going to walk away with listen to learn just one thing, buying the talent you need. And buying means you have to have money.
Yes.
Meaning you have to have success and profit. You have to have cost control, the right margins, all of that stuff that generates. A lot of people don't realize that the net operating income of a business goes to grow the company and to give new wages. Right. I mean, you pay off debt, buy new equipment. You don't do all that stuff out of the cash flow of the business. It has to be on the bottom line and it has to be there.
And let's face it. We're in a customer service business, right?
Yeah, we are.
How could you possibly service your customers right if you don't have the correct staff to do that?
Yeah.
Again, a flawed business model.
Yeah, period. Buying the talent you need. So, I mean, the big question is how do you do that? And that could be a different episode. You got to come back and,
yeah.
And explain like all the other coaches come on and talk about. We are in such a dynamic business. It's not hobbyist type business today. It's not. It's big. It's sophisticated. We have to learn how to be better leaders, improve our culture, make sure that we're listening to our people. Lately, I've been calling it management by walking around. And way back, Hewlett Packard that created MBWA, and then Tom Peters wrote a book, In Search of Excellence, in 82, who brought that whole concept back around. And then just recently, guys talking about having cameras in the shop and finding out how people were stealing from them. And I'm saying, oh, cool, interesting. Guess what? You need the cameras. I get that. But that isn't in lieu of being with your people.
Yes.
Manage by walking around. The common sense that God gave you that in the policies in your business, all you get a chance to see them and feel them and be with them right. If you're out there.
So, Carm, we talked about culture.
Yeah.
Right. We do two big training events a year, right? So we do Super Saturday in Pennsylvania, which I've seen you there as well, and TSD.
Yeah.
We always stay over, right? For Super Saturday this past year, we closed down on a Friday to go to training.
Nice.
Right. So like last night, we went over to the Palisades Mall and we did go-karts at 11 o'clock at night. You know, we went to Dave & Buster's and had dinner as a group.
Perfect.
Yeah, because you have to bond with your crew. Again, your team is the most valuable asset you have. How could you possibly offer the best customer support without a quality team?
Sell tires?
I do.
A lot?
Not many. For a small shop, we do about 400 or 500 tires a year. Which isn't bad.
Tell me about supply chain. Are we having any issues getting parts?
A lot of electronic parts.
Okay.
Yes,
electronic.
Absolutely. I mean, I have a GMC vehicle on a lot right now. I've been waiting 4 months for an anti-lock brake control module. Intergalactic national back order, you know, one of those things, you know, and we run into that quite frequently. I think after COVID, some supply items just never recovered.
Interesting. A lot of talk about communication in our industry today as being in the top 3 to 4 critical strategies or policies or procedures that you have to have, that 360 communication between front and back of shop and, of course, office and owner. How are you guys making that work well?
I mean, the three most important communication items that I can, attest to is the first and foremost, again, we're customer service. So the communication between the customer and ourselves. Today, if you're not using digital inspection, you're a fool. All right. I was using digital inspection when I was running my business out of my house 10 years ago. Can you imagine that? I had tablets.
You were a house guy, huh? Oh, all right.
You know, that sometimes when you got a big family, you got to figure out how to make things work.
5 kids. Wow. Yeah. Okay. I get it.
If you're not communicating through a digital inspection platform, you're just missing the boat. Because let's face it, when we were young, Carm, what did we do? We would get the customer into the shop and we'd do a show and tell.
Yeah.
This is our show and tell.
By the way, I heard a great stat. Customers want to be communicated with 86% of the time through, you know, the answer, text.
Oh, okay.
You agree with that?
I do. Yep. It's quite frankly, it's easy. It's Yeah, of course, a text shouldn't be so complicated. It should be like a dialogue that consumes more time. But it can be a form to have the customer contact us, get the quick things through the process. Absolutely. We even do, you know, text payment processes through.
What are your methodologies or policies about front to back of shop communications? How are you making that work?
Well, I mean, our shop is small, so we still do, you know, technician walks to the service advisor walks to the technician. Right. You know, our digital inspection platform through AutoVitals does have the, you know, ability to go totally paperless, but I haven't done that yet.
Okay.
You know, I still want to have that communication with the service advisor at the vehicle. I think it's better for establishing understood priorities, you know, because if you're a small shop owner, you're focusing on customer loyalty. You know, like some shops, they don't have customer loyalty and they focus on high volume and customer turnover. I focus on customer loyalty. So when a car needs, let's say the brakes are 3 millimeters to 4 millimeters, you know, thick, you know, which is the time when you're starting to tell a customer, hey, you're coming up on brakes. You know, where some shops, they don't know if that customer is going to come back. They might sell that brake job today. Our shop is going to advise the customer, hey, we're going to check your brakes again next visit.
Yeah.
Right. So that's now we're going to make that a cautionary item. So the communication with that customer is to establish priority. And I feel that when a service advisor visits the car and reviews that, you know, list of items with the technician, it's better for him to communicate the priorities of the repairs. So repairs and maintenance items.
What's your feel, Tom, about recommending to a new customer that you're doing the courtesy inspection to that has a yellow on brakes? Never been there before. You have confident you can bring them back?
Sometimes. I mean, I have a very high loyalty business. I mean, you know, when other shops are struggling with car count, car count is normally pretty stable.
Okay.
Because we do honestly tell customers what they really need. Let's say that new customer comes in. We have to dialogue with that customer to let them know that brakes are subjective. Right. And I use the example of if this was my 17-year-old son's car, it might go through brakes faster than the way you're driving. Right. So we'll check them again next visit. So we're not selling them brakes today, nor would we recommend it. We're telling them that this is just advisory. It means they're getting close, but it's very difficult for us to determine how much longer they're going to last because it's dependent on your driving habits.
Can we tell them at the counter, listen, we do business with a ton of customers who've become loyal to us. And we look forward to you being a loyal client also.
That's a great approach. Yes, absolutely. I would love to bring that in.
Yeah, yeah, cool. There's so much to talk about. Independent groups in town. You don't have a lot of members in the NAPA program in your area. And I get it because there are pockets of that live in cities. But you're trying to put together an independent group.
Yes.
And we have one in Buffalo, 8 years strong. 20, 25 shop owners show up once a month at an early morning breakfast. And I'm just telling you that that's a really cool way. It seems to work for us.
Yeah.
Tell me what you're doing.
So last year about this time, so early 2023, I was frustrated because, you know, I had just gone to a local training seminar put on by a local parts store that did not meet what I consider good standards. Not to be, you know, talk poorly of a, you know, fellow technical trainer, but sometimes they're just not as good as they should be. And I was frustrated with the quality of training in our area, you know, and having a background in technical training, I knew we could do better. You know, there's very good talent out there, but of course you have to buy that talent in, you know, it might be $2,000 or $3,000 to get a technical instructor in to come in. So I approached the other like-minded shops in our area, two of which are NAPA stores, others aren't, right? Two aren't, right? So there's five shops that kind of run our program, plus a local NAPA store is actually helping us as well in the parts store.
Good.
And I said, let's form a group. A month to figure out what we should call ourselves, you know, so we call ourselves South Jersey Automotive Training Alliance, and we put on our first class, and it was a NAPA-sponsored class, so it didn't cost our group anything. A local restaurant, diner in town has a great banquet room in the back, and they charge us $25 a head for a, you know, abbreviated menu, you know, you can get a Caesar wrap or a salad or a hamburger or something like that, and they give us the room for free. It's a good way to balance a budget. So, you know, we put 50 people in that room. The first time we had a class.
Nice.
And then we had Craig Van Battenberg down from Massachusetts to do a hybrid class for us too.
Right.
So we started running these events, you know, at net zero. You know, in other words, we're volunteering our time, collecting rosters and soliciting our group. So we had four classes last year, you know, and I don't think any of the classes were under 50. I think the most expensive class was one we had to get Craig down from Massachusetts. I think it was $120 for a two-night class. I mean, you can't
shake a stick at that. No, you can't.
No. Normally, a two-night class, it's, you know, $150 a night. So it'd be $300 for
them. Right, exactly.
And if we have a surplus because, you know, I based the budget off 40 people and 60 showed up, at the end of the year, we gave away $2,500 in door prizes in December when NGK came and did a class for us.
You're listening to this. Tom has just laid out some incredible thinking points, strategic ideas for you to grow and improve, to stretch the camaraderie that you have with local people, to commit to training, to hear the story about what we're going to pay people and how we're going to train them. And he's a great guy. But even better, even greater, is you're a kidney donor. And I want to talk about it because recently, Chris Cotton, who is on the Aftermarket Radio Network, his wife, Kimberly, gave a kidney to her brother. Mm-hmm. And he did an episode. He explained the upside. And he also recently did one now. You gave your kidney to your brother-in-law. Tell us the story.
So my wife's family, my mother-in-law, was married twice. Her first husband passed of a chronic kidney disease called IgA nephropathy. I think I'm saying that right. And it affected the first three children of that marriage. So my wife is from the second marriage. So when my oldest brother-in-law was going into kidney failure, had already been on dialysis. And for those who don't know, dialysis is not easy on your body. It is extremely difficult and prone to complications. So even though some people go through dialysis for decades, right? We all got tested. And just coincidentally, I kind of matched better than anyone else. So, you know, I went up to the hospital in Livingston. I believe it was the St. Barnabas. And, you know, we talked to the people there, including social workers and surgeons and the people that ran the program. And I was like, yeah, I can do this. You know, and that was in 2001. So that's a long time ago. It was 2 years, 3 years ago. And since then, unfortunately, my family, that disease has required other kidneys. So there is five living kidney donors in my family, which is kind of unheard of.
Donors or recipients?
Donors.
Donors. Wow.
So my wife and myself and two of my sister-in-laws, right, gave to their brothers, right? Because the disease, IgA nephropathy, can damage even a donor kidney.
Your wife gave up too?
Yes.
Wow.
And my sister-in-law, having an odd blood type, felt that she was the wife of my brother-in-law that I gave to, felt compelled to be an altruistic donor. So she gave without anything. You know, wow. So I gave to a family member, but an altruistic donor gives to some stranger.
What's her strange blood type? Do you remember?
I believe it was AB or something like that.
Okay. You know?
So it's like I'm O, which is a universal type.
I have a very, very rare. I want to hear more on the kidney, but I'll never forget being in the Army in basic training. They said, anyone who donates blood today can have the day off. And I raised my hand right away. I go into the donor facility. It was on my dog tag. It was already there.
Right.
So the guy grabs the dog tag and he says, you come with me. And I didn't know quite why. And I'm on there and he's hooking me up and he goes, I'm going to take extra special care of you. You're going to get some extra treats at the end. And I says, what's the big deal? He says, you have one of the rarest blood types.
AB negative or something?
AB negative. Yeah. And he says, and that's me. So I have to take extra special care. We don't get a lot of you in here. So
my sister-in-law is AB negative.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. AB negative. I find it fascinating to 20 some years ago, you still have one kidney. What was your life post-surgery and how is it today? Do you even know or miss it?
As we were sitting in the training class, the only thing I noticed about having one kidney is only one part of my back hurt when I really had to go to the bathroom. Okay. Other than that, very nothing else. Yes, you have limitations. You can't take certain NSAIDs like Advil and ibuprofen because they are very difficult on the kidneys. And everybody should know this, quite frankly. So if you're out in your backyard in the summertime and sweating like a fiend and your back hurts, do not take Advil. It's really bad for you.
Don't take Advil.
And I don't mean to talk badly about Advil.
That's okay.
Any NSAID.
You know what works on me? Aleve. That like an Advil?
That's an NSAID, yes.
Oh, that is?
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, those types of medications, I believe it's like a 1 in 10,000 spontaneous kidney failure. Actually, one of our customers, he was in construction, had a sore back, and it was summertime, and he wasn't hydrated enough, and he was popping Advil like Chiclets. He killed both of his kidneys.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So go to Tylenol. It doesn't work as well on, you know, joint pain, but, you know, it's better for you.
Well, thank you for that. So the recovery period. Tell me about the 6 months after.
So the way the doctors at St. Barnabas told me is that your kidney is one of the few organs that will adjust itself to your needs. right? So in a very short period of time, it was probably 6 weeks or so, you know, in that period of time, I felt lethargic and just not right, right? But within that 6 weeks, you know, you're back to normal. Your kidney doubles in size and it does the function of two.
Really?
So listen, I'm not a doctor. That's my understanding. And beyond that, I didn't have any other complications whatsoever.
Our body is such a miracle. When I heard Chris, I can't remember if he talked about it in his episode or he told me on the side, or where did I learn this, that they don't take out the bad kidney, they just put the other kidney in.
That's right.
Is that, that's right.
It goes in the lower abdomen.
Yeah, it goes in the lower abdomen.
So my brother-in-law,
fascinating.
So he had my kidney, my wife's kidney, and an altruistic donor. So he has five kidneys in him. You think three donated kidneys and two his original kidneys. Now his original kidneys are about the size of a walnut at this point, you know, because they've just, you know, shrunk up to nothing. But you know, I think he has five kidneys in there.
It took that many?
Yes, unfortunately.
Wow. I know you've turned into here all this great automotive service business acumen, but when we have a chance to tell a story like this, because life goes on in our bays, in our world.
That's right. And there's nothing more important than family.
Wow. It sure is. Listen, thank you so much for this. I know you and I could probably talk for 2 or 3 hours and just go from rabbit hole to rabbit hole, but I got to have you come back on. This was really great. Tom Petty.
Carm, thanks for having me.
Petty Motor Works out of Waretown, New Jersey, Napa Gold. And congrats on that. That's not easy to get.
No, it's not.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.